You know, on our last Sunday here together, it would have been nice to have readings that lent themselves more to the occasion. It would have been nice to hear the words of St. Paul, perhaps in his letter to the church in Philippi, saying, "I thank my God every time I remember you, constantly praying with joy in every one of my prayers for all of you, because of your sharing in the gospel from the first day until now." Or even the passage from Ecclesiastes 3, made popular in a song by the Byrds a very, very long time ago, "Turn, turn, turn. To everything there is a season." There are so many appropriate sentiments as we move into new and uncharted territory, but those passages are not what we have today. Because while it is the last Sunday of Lee's ministry at Grace, and that is certainly monumental for all of us here, none more than me, this is still, and truly more importantly, Christ the King Sunday. And so, the reading we have from 2 Samuel talks about the kingship of Israel's most heralded king, David. And from Revelation, we hear of the eternal kingship of Christ and the expectation that he will return in power and great glory. And that is certainly the appropriate lead up to Advent, where we anxiously and excitedly await the birth of Christ. The interchange between Pilate and Jesus that we have in our gospel reading from John today is a somewhat odd exchange. Granted, it's about the kingship of Jesus, actually whether he is or is not claiming to be king, which if he is staking that claim is obviously problematic for the reigning emperor. The format of this conversation between Pilate and Jesus seems very contemporary. We can imagine it happening today. It's not the stilted or weighted questions that we so often find when the scribes and temple leaders are involved. Pilate has been put in the position of judge and jury here, and it seems that though he is trying to truly get straight answers out of Jesus. "Are you the king of the Jews?" Pilate asks. And Jesus doesn't answer the question directly, but reroutes the conversation. "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate, we imagine, becoming frustrated by Jesus' unwillingness to answer directly, says, "I'm not a Jew." Basically, your own people have handed you over and put you in this very tenuous position. What on earth have you done to make them so angry? And then Jesus, sounding very ephemeral and downright blasphemous, says that his kingdom is not of this world. And so Pilate again tries to rein Jesus in, and he asks again, thinking he's finally getting somewhere in this deliberation, "So you are a king?" But Jesus will not be entrapped. And so he again turns this around to Pilate. He says, "You say that I am. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." And we see, if we have eyes to see, that throughout this whole disjointed interchange, Jesus was urging Pilate to come around to see for himself, to allow his heart to be burst open, to accept the inbreaking of God in Pilate's very midst. And in his search for answers, Pilate could not see the truth. The truth that was being revealed to the world, the truth of God's self-sacrificial love that was standing right in front of him. But Pilate could not grasp it. And this is made abundantly clear in the line that follows this passage from our reading today, in which Pilate responds to Jesus with one more poignant and revelatory question. what is truth. And in the chaos and commotion of our world, we might find ourselves siding up to Pilate in full agreement. What indeed is truth? It seems so far and fleeting. Just because we're bombarded with opinion and information does not mean that we have a better handle or a firmer grip on truth. But we, like Pilate, have truth right before us. We have the truth of Jesus, the one who came into the world as the embodiment of the love of God. And Jesus is and always should be our standard for truth. Quoting Presiding Bishop Michael Curry, if it's not about love, it's not about God. And that, my friends, is truth. In each and every moment of each and every day, in each and every decision that we make, our standard for truth and for what is right is Jesus, and is therefore love. As we all move into the next phase of our lives as followers of Jesus, remember this. If we keep Jesus at the forefront of each decision, of each word, of each moment, we will not go wrong. This time of transition is an anxious time. It is an uncertain time. And when we are anxious and uncertain, we often neglect to keep love first. And sometimes we even resort to our more base instincts. We may tend to impatience and assumptions rather than asking for clarification or truly listening to each other in love. The time we are all entering into in very different ways is a liminal time. It's a time that is unsettled. Scripturally, if something is liminal, it is not either or, not black or white, but rather gray, uncertain. One good, hard example of something liminal is the inside of a door frame. You're not in one room or another. It's in between. And in between, or liminal space and time, unusual and exciting things can happen. Pay attention during this liminal time. Listen to each other and listen for the voice of God. As you move forward, some very specific things will take place. For a time, there will be supply priests here to lead the services. Some you may want to keep forever. That won't happen. I'll talk about that in a minute. Sometime after the first of the year, the diocesan office will help the vestry find an interim rector to be here during the time of transition, which is normally between a year and 18 months, and 99.999% of the time, the interim will not stay on as the rector. Much as you might want that to happen, but as we know here, that's that one little 0.0001% of the time where the Holy Spirit takes charge, God's people pay attention, and the interim becomes the rector. That is far from the norm. A search committee will be chosen by the vestry, and the process of searching for the next rector of Grace Church will actively begin. It is a long and seemingly unwieldy and arduous process with many, many steps along the way. This process must take time and be done thoroughly so that there will be a good fit between Grace and the next rector. Trust the process. Trust the people who will be tasked with the responsibility of being on the search committee. Hold each other up in love, and do not forget for one minute that the Holy Spirit will guide you into all truth and will lead Grace into a next phase of ministry. I love you and always will. Thank you for a wonderful 10 years.